This is a very special Amarin's podcast, a live
edition. Like a very special Moesha?
It could be. Tonight. Although Nancy Reagan will not be joining us. Oh, that was a Facts of Life or something, wasn't it?
On a very special Moesha.
Yes.
I killed that one, didn't I?
Yes, you did, because I'd never actually seen Moesha, but that's all right.
Nor have I. I just like the name.
It is a good name. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Amarin's podcast episode 229, and this live episode is being brought to you by Honey Wears Plaid. My Honey Wears Plaid, actually, because Honey and the boyfriend are at a winery in somewhere in Virginia, I suppose.
With no wireless,
and could not do a live show tonight. And so, trooper that I am, I stepped in and took it over so that no one would have to miss out on a live show this week. Because, you know, that's just how I am. I'm a giver. What? No affirmations?
I'm sorry. Yes, oh. Arthur, you are a giver. I'm sorry, I forgot to read that out of the script.
Oh, there you go. You lost your place, did you? Well, joining me tonight, as you have already no doubt noticed, is Daniel Brewer of Walkahol and the Third Colony. Hello, Daniel.
Well, hello, Arthur, also of Live It Up, the podcast.
Oh, well, that's right. I forgot about that. Sorry. And also Turnip Head. Hello, Turnip Head.
Hey there.
The world famous Canadian.
Oh, world famous. Thank you so much.
Well, how is you guys tonight?
I'm just ducky.
It wouldn't be
I'm a hot, sweaty mess, but I'm loving it.
Sorry?
I'm a hot, sweaty mess, but I'm loving it. It's wicked hot up here.
You better be careful.
Is it as hot up there as it was when you were at Gay Days melting in front of Space Mountain?
You didn't even see melting there in comparison. I was sweating so bad 2 days ago that my t-shirt was dripping.
You know, I'm this has nothing to do with the Amarin's 229 episode, but I just finalized, I'm in the process of finalizing plans to go to California in October.
Well...
To visit some podcaster type folks,
the ones who will agree to meet with you. That is,
yeah, none of them know yet, so it could be a very short trip.
Why don't we take this opportunity, Daniel, to give an update on the Pride 48 DVD, since that has been
let me grab the razor blades. No, for editing. For editing. No,
oh, okay.
What did you think?
Oh, okay.
It's one of those things that... have you ever done a home improvement project?
Yes, I have.
Have you ever uttered those famous words in doing a home improvement project of, this will just take an hour? And then 3 weeks later, when you still can't use the toilet because you've ripped up the entire bathroom floor, you know, your husband goes... this is considerably longer than an hour.
Yes.
Have you ever had that feeling? That's where I'm at right now. I am 99% done with it. There was just a lot of weird audio issues in the recording, not from the podcast.
Although there
themselves.
Was some of that too, probably. Especially on my show.
Minor, but the just making it, because I have this OCD thing about audio, and I wanted to make sure that you could hear it in a car regardless of the show, so I've spent a lot of time levelating stuff and getting it all so that you can hear it in a car, and I probably spent too much time doing it. I really do apologize. It is almost done. It will be done this weekend regardless.
That's good.
Even if I just have to put out a DVD of static.
Well, in the case of certain shows from New Zealand, that would probably be an improvement. But
so, yeah, it will be going out this weekend. I do apologize. I'm hideously... And the worst thing is I don't have... Because I wanted to respect the privacy of those who had purchased the DVD, I didn't want to do a group email to everyone to say, hey, this is what's going on. So I have to kind of do individual emails. And
why don't you just BCC everybody?
Yeah, I guess I could do that, but isn't that still in the header?
Nope, it's not. That's why it's called blind carbon copy.
Yeah, although having said that, there have been ones I've sent where it seems to show up to everybody anyway. I don't know what that's about.
So anyway, I will get it shipped, and as soon as I get it finished this weekend, I will be sending an individual email to everyone and saying, it's done, sorry, we're going.
Yeah.
You'll have it. I swear. And then it'll start showing up on the Pride 48 stream, which is a completely different technical problem.
Yes. And are we still looking for volunteers to help with the whole Pride 48 thing?
Yes, we are. If you have a penchant to do a lot of work for absolutely no money.
And probably have people growl at you.
Yes. We need people to... I knew Wes Stone had volunteered to do the scheduling, but he hasn't done anything on it. So I need someone to handle the scheduling of the day-to-day or the month-to-month repeated schedule on Pride 48.
Because it does change.
It changes, and it's just gotten out of hand as shows drop off and come on, and then it's a matter of it, you know what I'm saying? It's not a technical issue. I will handle all the technical issues of downloading the shows and uploading them and whatnot. It's really just a pen and paper thing of figuring out where to put things. So yeah. It's kind of like a big game. Like when Arthur and I first did it the very first time, it was a pile of index cards.
Yeah.
With us trying to figure it out. So
is fitting together like a jigsaw puzzle with pieces missing.
That's correct. And without having the box to see the picture.
Yeah. Well, that kind of looks like it might be a cat, or it could be a tree.
It could. But you know what, Arthur? This is boring to everyone. Please continue on in with the excellence that people are used to associating with...
Yes. Well,
what's the name of your show again?
Who knows? I just wanted to go over that because we haven't had the opportunity to talk about that on the live stream at all, and I haven't mentioned it, partly because I keep forgetting, as I do. And so I just wanted to take advantage of that. Well, there are, of course, things going on that I wanted to go over a bit today. One of the things that happened in the news was that Judge Walker lifted his stay with allowing marriages in California to resume on August 18th if another stay isn't issued by the Ninth Circuit.
That makes so much more sense, because when I first heard it, I thought they said Judge Wapner.
Him or Judge Judy, one or the other.
So yes, he lifted his stay.
Yes, he did. And you can probably hear Jake in the background. Anyway, and so unless
Jake is very excited about
it. He is, so there's probably somebody out in his park, and he gets very, very annoyed when they do that, particularly if they're dogs. Mm-hmm. But
I'm keep sidetracking you, I'm sorry. Yes, so yes, you can get married, but you have to wait.
Yes. And of course, some parts of California, like West Hollywood, have said they're ready to resume immediately as soon as they can. And I imagine some of the other jurisdictions will as well. Of course, Imperial County voted to allow a Christianist group to challenge to file an appeal, or try to file an appeal to the Walker decision. And I personally don't think that's going to go anywhere, because as a subunit of California, they don't have, as far as I can see, they don't have standing.
Yeah, and not only that, it's already been appealed to the next level federally.
Yeah.
Which should surprise no one, right? I mean, either side would have appealed, regardless of who lost. This was designed from both sides to be a Supreme Court case. So it's not going to stop until it gets to the Supreme Court. Just go ahead and
unless the Ninth Circuit rules that the motley crew who is defending Prop 8 don't have the standing to appeal, which is possible. And if that's the case, it would only stand for California.
Yeah, but I mean, the people who are appealing the ruling are the same. They're the plaintiffs or the defendants in the original case, correct?
They are, but the actual defendants is the state of California, personified by the governor and the attorney general, who have both said that the state of California, which is the only one that can suffer any injury in this injury, in the legal sense, they're the only ones who can suffer injury, and therefore it may be judged that they are the only ones who can actually appeal the ruling, not these people who are intervening. the, what do they call them? Defendant interveners or whatever it was.
Interlopers.
Yeah.
Interlopers!
But even if the Ninth Circuit does take up the appeal, and assuming that they uphold the Walker ruling and it then is kicked up to the Supreme Court has never heard a case with defendant interveners before. And they may not do it now either. They may say, nope, sorry, you don't have the standing necessary to come to the Supreme Court, so they kick it back down. And in that case, the Ninth Circuit ruling would be law, and it would cover a huge swathe of the U.S., as well as Guam and the Marianas.
You know, well, I mean, but the Supreme Court always has that option, right? The Supreme Court doesn't have to hear anything.
No, they you're absolutely right.
The Supreme Court can, even if they did have standing, the Supreme Court can just say, you know what? We're going to leave the Ninth District as it is.
Yeah.
We're going to leave their ruling as it is.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So
one of the things that came out, this was right after the Walker ruling, there was a conservative gay writer, and I don't know his name because I don't really care that much, to be honest, but he said that he wasn't particularly supportive of gay marriage as a immediate goal, although long-term he supports it. But he said that the Walker ruling cut off the possibility of compromise because the ruling says that civil unions are inherently unequal. So
correct.
My first question is, do you think that the gay movement in the U.S. has now moved past civil unions to accepting nothing but full marriage equality?
I would hope so. I would hope that the gay marriage movement has arrived to where I'm already at.
Yes. Yeah. It would be nice.
It's silly, right? I mean, the whole civil unions thing, aside from any legalities, aside from anything like that, to me, it's just always been silly.
Yeah.
Let's give all the same rights and everything, but let's not call it this. It's like, you know, a picture of a duck. If it walks like a duck and quacks like it, why go through the expense of maintaining two separate legal statuses that are, in essence, supposed to be the same?
Yeah, and as we've talked about previous live shows, it's also true that the definition of civil unions varies from place to place. And so just because you have a California civil union doesn't mean that's applicable in any other state, even if they have civil unions.
Correct. I mean, if you were going to pursue this path, if you're going to pursue the path of civil unions being equal to marriage, you know, all of those thousands of laws that specifically mention marriage are going to have to be changed to also encompass civil unions if you want it to truly be equal. Or we could just call it marriage and save ourselves a whole bunch of time.
Yes. Well, I saw another HomoCon video, actually, and this I originally saw at Joe My God, although I've posted it to my blog since, and it was a couple of self-proclaimed gay teabaggers, and get your mind out of the gutter, it's in the political sense, and one of them was saying that he thought that, because originally it was reported they were against same-sex marriage or marriage equality, and that's actually not really what they were saying. What the one who was more up on the issues was saying is that marriage should not be a religious controlled function, that everybody should have the right to go and get a civil marriage, and that should be the only thing that matters for legal purposes. And you know, churches can be free then to do whatever they want, marry people or not marry people as they see fit. And
I totally agree with that. I totally agree. That's what I've always said too. Said that before. I think when we've talked and I've talked about it on Honey Show.
Well, isn't that basically what Canada has?
Well, you do have to go first and get a marriage license.
Yeah.
Issued. That's government issued.
Right, but don't you have to do that here?
Okay.
What
you do with that?
Yeah.
What you do with that, though, is then you can go now either to a justice of peace and have a non-religious, non-denominational, nothing to do with God or anything ceremony in front of the justice of the peace, or you can go and have a religious ceremony in whatever recognized religious venue and organization you belong to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're considered legally married.
I wouldn't argue. I would just point out that is exactly the same system we have here. You know, except I can go.
If you're a boy and a boy, you can't do that.
Well, most yeah, states, except, yeah. But what I'm, if you'll indulge me for a second, the point is that the only thing preventing us from getting married is a legal thing, because marriage is a legal institution.
Yeah.
If I go now on the internet and become an ordained minister for whatever that place is that you pay them $50, now I'm allowed to marry people. Well, I can't just go out and marry people. Mm. They have to have the legal documents in place for them to be married, and then I can, you know, sign off on the ceremony.
Yeah.
Can't you get ordained at the online university of something or other?
Yeah, that's why my point is that it's, you know, there a preacher does not have the right to marry someone, to institute a legal contract between the two. All he can do is be a certified witness to that legal contract that comes from the state.
Yes,
exactly.
So exactly. We're in the same boat. It's just that our laws here, basically, you know, thanks to the Defense of Marriage Act and all the other crap, is basically saying, well, no, two same-sex people cannot get married.
Right. And what they're essentially doing is they're deferring all of their decisions to the church people, some of whom are, as we all know, adamantly opposed to allowing same-sex marriages.
Right, it's a red herring, because the religious has nothing to do with it. You don't have to be religious in this country to get married.
Absolutely. You don't have to, because if that were true, then atheists wouldn't be allowed to marry. And,
correct.
Of course, I mean, we could go down the whole road. You know, if it was true that marriage was really about children, then people who didn't have children, people would be required to produce children within a certain amount of time for their marriage to be valid, or they wouldn't allow childless to marry, blah, 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 blah. It goes on and on and on. It's all correct. Religious arguments that are against it. But what if, instead of allowing churches to perform legal marriages, they took that away entirely and said, right, from now on, all that counts is when you go to your local registry office, county clerk, whatever it's called, you fill out the paperwork, you pay your fees, you swear your oaths and whatever it is, your affidavits, and that's it, then you're married. And if you then want to go to a church, then you do so.
Can I just point something out?
I think that's brilliant.
Can I just point something out?
Yes.
That's already how it is.
Well, it is, except that you get your license and then you go somewhere else and have the actual ceremony performed, and then they sign the license.
But the ceremony has no
valid until somebody officiates.
That's right. That's exactly right.
This is what I'm trying to point out is it is their choice to not have it validated at the point of getting the license. They could.
That's
right
true.
There.
That is true.
Right there,
yes.
In the building, walk two stalls over to the what do they call it? The people that with the stamps. What do they call them?
Notaries.
Public. The notary.
Public notary.
They could walk two stalls over to the notary right there and pay them the $10 or whatever, and they're married. Legally, they're married. It has nothing. They choose to not have that done and
right.
to, you know, go and have a ceremony somewhere else for somebody, another person who has been ordained, or been given the power to notarize it. Because when they say, by the power vested in me by the state, the only power that you have been invested in you by the state is the power to certify this legal contract.
Right. And what I'm basically talking about is taking that step away, and that when they go to get their license, that's it. They don't have to do anything else if they don't want to. When they step away from the counter, they're married legally in the eyes of the state. And if they then want to go get a religious ceremony or a non-religious public ceremony of some sort, that's their business, but there's no legal requirement to do so. And conversely, that ministers of religion would no longer have the legal authority to pronounce anyone married. That all they could do is officiate at a church blessing, in the same way that now, say, for instance, Christian churches baptize people or confirm them or what have you, and they argue constantly about who's really baptized because of their differing ideologies and so on, and theologies and doctrine and dogma and all that stuff. Let them go ahead and argue about who's really married, because that doesn't interest the state. The state's only interest is in upholding fair and equal treatment under the law. Go ahead.
Well, I've argued this for a long time. I mean, we've beat this horse to death. But to me, is like marriage is a tax status, and therefore that is the legality of marriage is a tax status, and to deny a segment of the taxpaying public the benefit of that tax status is inherently inherently unequal, and blah blah blah. The religion thing is a red herring. The procreation thing is a red herring. And we're getting mired down in all of this stuff when, you know, the system that you just laid out is basically what we have right now.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm just talking about refining it a little bit.
Right. We just need to educate. We need to allow, when people say, you know, that the minister married me, we need to step in and go, actually, technically, you know, they were, all he did was certify a contract.
Yeah.
You know, the state was the one that gave you the rights. I don't know. Look at that. The people are bailing out. We're losing people, Arthur.
Yeah, but people come and go all the time.
Did either of you hear or see Glenn Beck on O'Reilly the other night?
I heard about it. I didn't actually see it, fortunately.
Well, I just really like Beck's quote, but I like how he started it. It was, honestly, I think we have bigger fish to fry, when O'Reilly said what his thoughts were on gay marriage and what the threats are to America. And I thought, okay, that's a great way to start it. But at the end of it, he says, I don't think marriage, that's a government issue, actually. That's a religious right.
Yeah, and he was also asked directly, did he think that it was destroying civilization, basically? And he said, no. That's a whole issue in itself, what Glenn Beck is up to.
I totally thought that was contradictory.
Well, yeah, especially because he's Mormon. And his church advocates against it.
Breaking news, Glenn Beck said something that was contradictory within the same conversation. Oh, that almost never happened.
Then the same freaking sentence or breath, I know. Yeah. But no, I just found it really funny.
Yeah, well, I actually think we're beginning to see a shift on the right, or maybe a split on the right is probably a better way of putting it, where some of the more, what's the word I'm looking for? I was going to say rational, that's not the right word. Some of the more practical, we'll say, conservatives, see this as a losing issue. If you look at the trend lines over time, acceptance for actual full marriage equality has been growing steadily for 20 years. And they know that the two lines are crossing right now, and within a very few short years, there's going to be clear majorities that are supporting full marriage equality rather than just civil unions and all that. And they don't want to be on the wrong side of an issue that could cost them votes. Now, the religious nutcases, they're never going to compromise. They're never going to back down.
Right. And it also just becomes a more and more ludicrous position to hold. When you can point to Canada and the UK and all these other, you know, our allies across the world that not only allow gay marriage but have gays in their military, and they haven't blown up, they haven't, you know, suffered any huge, horrible ramifications, you know, God has not smote them from heaven, you know, it becomes a more and more ridiculous position to hold of, oh my God, this is going to destroy us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It just becomes more and more indefensible as the rest of the world, you know, gets their head out of their ass.
Well, yeah, and it's also the conservative position is to support individual liberty and freedom, and you can't do that if you're simultaneously denying it to certain people just because of religious objections. The two are incompatible views.
Well, that's never stopped them before. But
very true.
Speaking along that same thing, I mean, are we done with this? Can we? Tangentially related, I guess, would be the don't ask, don't tell stuff, which we just, on Rachel Maddow last night, we just lost another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when are we going to get our head out of the ass on that?
Well, that actually kind of gets to the controversy of the week, where Gibbs was moaning about the so-called professional left, whatever that is, and how they wouldn't be satisfied until we had Canadian-style healthcare and abolished the Pentagon. And first of all, I'm thinking, so what's the problem with having Canadian-style healthcare?
Yeah.
First of all.
Oh my God, no!
I don't want my geometry.
I don't want my basic healthcare needs taken care of in this country. I would much rather send indigent people to the most expensive medical care that we could possibly provide them and then pay for it later.
Yeah. Well, one of the kids in the hall was on, two of them were on Keith Olbermann last night, talked about their new show, but I've forgotten which one. Well, actually, I didn't know which one it was because I was listening to the audio, not watching it. And he was saying that Canadians have to pay dearly for having better healthcare than the U.S. They have to live 6 years longer on average than Americans so that they can atone for that sin.
That's right. No, it comes down to, and I fear for my fellow Americans on this just because of the insane binary world that we have become accustomed to. Yeah. Right? Everything is black and white. Everything is us or them.
Yeah.
Right? By extending rights to one group, we, you know, in people's minds, we're taking those rights away from someone else, even though we're not. You know, it is not a zero-sum game. But that is the argument that they have, and that is how they think. So, you know, this whole healthcare thing is ludicrous, right? Because I constantly hear people say, it was like, well, you know, I don't want to just have to wait in line here and do this, you know, thing, and people in Canada have to wait in line to get medical care and yada, 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 which is not necessarily any more true in Canada than it is here now, as far as waiting in line. I mean, I'm a doctor's kid. I know, I've heard all my life people bitching about having to wait in doctor's waiting rooms.
Yeah.
You know, that's just life. But at the same time, it's like, that's basic healthcare, though. You don't have to, if you're not happy with the basic healthcare, you are still free to get private insurance. You are still free to have better healthcare and pay for it.
Absolutely. That's the way it is here in
New Zealand. All we're saying is that Joe Schmo down the street there, who isn't able to afford better healthcare, if something goes wrong with him, then we're going to use this much cheaper option of us already paying and having a system in place to take care of him, instead of foisting him off on the emergency rooms as we do now. And if people don't believe that their tax dollars are paying for health care right now, we are. We're just getting a really shitty deal on it.
Yeah.
So all we're talking about doing, which it annoys the fuck out of me when I talk, hear libertarians talk about this, because I would think libertarians
really feel.
No, I would think libertarians would be right on board with this. Here is a case of, you know, if we had national health care, this is basically nothing different than we have now, other than we're getting a better deal. The government is not wasting our money.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, it totally makes sense, and honestly, from looking at it from the outside, I completely agree with your argument. Why not fill up walk-in clinics even for people who have the sniffles, instead of filling up the emergency room? And emergency room resources are way more expensive than walk-in clinics.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes. Like, by like multiple times, like not even like, you know, two or three times, like 10 or 12 times more expensive, because emergency rooms have to be there, have to be equipped for emergencies, which means we have to have specialists on staff 24 hours a day.
And a lot of expensive equipment, too.
A whole lot of expensive equipment.
I'm not going to go to the, wake up in the morning and I have a fever and I'm barfing and my nose is plugged, I'm not going to the emergency room to get a doctor's note because I don't want to go to work. I'm going to go to a walk-in clinic.
Right.
Yeah, well, most people would. I mean, if they could.
I meant in
civilized countries that actually have full health coverage.
No, what we do in this country here is if you're sick and you can't go to work, you just don't go to work. You call and you say you're sick.
Yeah.
But if it goes on for a couple of days, then most people that don't have health care just don't do anything. They do over-the-counter remedies. They do whatever. And it just propagates any kind of flu-type virus that we might have. That's why flu season is so annoying here.
Yeah.
It's because people don't have health care, so they can't go be put on antibiotics and stay on their antibiotic regimen and therefore become less contagious. It's like, instead, we, you know, they self-treat the symptoms while still remaining contagious, and then when they feel well enough to go back to work, basically just pass it around to everybody else, who then turns around and it's
Yes. It's absolutely true. And it becomes this vicious spiral, really.
It does, and it annoys me so much, just the small-minded thoughts of people, you know, who just buy into these things. You know, my dad uttered the phrase Obamacare the last time that I was home, and I just went off on him. I just literally went off on him. Which frightened Robert and my siblings, because my dad and I were literally screaming at each other. Which we love each other. Sorry, we enjoy spirited debate in the Brewer household. But you know, just the whole Obamacare thing, right? Is that is just that's a side issue. It's not Obamacare. Obama didn't write any of that legislation. You know, yeah. if you want to be pissed about it, then be pissed at Congress, or more specifically, be pissed at the Senate.
Yeah.
This is, but I think Obama has become the reverse of Reagan. He's like Obama is like the Velcro president.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like everything sticks to him. Even shit that he has nothing to do with sticks to him. You know, it's like the Obama administration is doing this and this and this. And it's like, well, these were policies that were in place before he even got there.
Yeah.
And, you know, legally, it is the job of the Justice Department to defend the positions of the United States, which were put into place by his previous president.
Or even, so in some cases, going back even further sometimes.
Right. But I'm just saying, you know, the Justice Department going and defending some stupid law that we have, you know, and nowadays we say, oh, the Obama administration is fucking us over. It's like, well, come on. Let's I'm not saying Obama's perfect. By no stretch of the imagination, what I'm saying is he's done things that have upset me. But if you're going to be upset with Obama, at least be upset with the things that Obama did, not these talking points of the Obama administration, the Obama, you know, Justice Department, the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Can I backtrack just for half a moment?
Go ahead.
No.
Please. All right. I would like to know, because healthcare isn't, One conception is that healthcare is free across Canada, and it's not. It's provincially mandated, monitored, controlled. So when I lived in Alberta, I had healthcare premiums that I had to pay every month, even though Alberta was the richest province in the country. But now that I live in Ontario, I don't have to pay for my healthcare at all whatsoever. It comes out of my taxes.
Right.
So, in comparison, what would it be for an average single person to have healthcare coverage where they could walk into a hospital or a doctor's office and whatnot and get their checkup, get their doctor's note, whatever, and not have to pay anything in the U.S.?
Well, not to pay anything? There is no such thing. To go in and pay a minimum copay for a healthy adult male, probably in the $600 to $800 a month range, and for a healthy adult female, probably in the $850 to $1,000 range.
That's obscene.
I'm sitting way back in my chair, because the most I've ever paid for my premiums when I lived in Alberta was $35 a month.
Because I don't want to talk out of my ass. I am now looking.
Oh, are you going to look it up?
I am now looking. The average health.
Are you morphing into Stephen from Wisconsin?
Yes, I am. let's see. So the average family health insurance policy is $13,375 a year.
Amazing.
Yeah. So basically, let's see. These are the premiums, so I'm assuming they're monthly. They may not be monthly, though. That would be helpful if they told me if this was monthly or not. The two of you, please talk while I scan.
Well, while you're saying that, in New Zealand, there are no copays of any sort for any hospital care, surgery, that sort of thing. The visit to your doctor, there is a charge, but that's subsidized depending on age and several other things. And most rehabilitation services are free, at least up to a point. And certain procedures are not covered and not fully. That's because the Conservative government has cut back on what's allowed. That'll change once Labour gets back into power, I'm sure. But in New Zealand would consider healthcare free, because we know we all pay for it through our taxes.
Well, see, that's the thing that has always annoyed me when I hear about, you know, free healthcare in Canada. Now, we don't have free healthcare. We pay for it in our taxes. We have a lot of social programs that help people out when you need them, but we all pay for them in our taxes. Now, you may go through your entire life and never need them, but when you need them, they're there, and it's frickin' brilliant. And you're not hard out on your luck sitting on a street corner.
Yeah, the average, from what I can grok from this, the average premium for a single person in 2009 was right around $450 a month. But that is for...
That's half my rent.
That's basic. I mean, that's with a $1,000 deductible and with a whole shitload of copays on that.
So that would probably be among the cheapest policies then.
Yeah, and the most basic.
Yeah.
That would not cover anything.
And that's seriously half my rent.
Right, and that's also that when I say that's the basic thing, that implies that you have never had you've never had a pre-existing condition, you've never had any kind of family history on stuff like that, because those are things that jack your rate up. Also, that would tend to be male, because females, we tend to, pardon the expression, but we screw over the females a lot just because, you know, they have kids. Especially women of childbearing age, because OBGYNs are very expensive, and so it becomes very expensive.
Yeah.
Taryn Michigan says she still owes $135, and she's got preventative insurance. That's ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, no, the healthcare costs are in, what is it? It's a ridiculous percentage of our GDP that we pay in healthcare right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, having worked in the insurance industry, but writing software for the insurance industry for a good portion of my professional career, you know, I'm aware of all the shit that goes on behind the scenes, right? I mean, as soon as you file a claim, there are entire divisions at insurance companies that now try to figure out how to deny you coverage after the fact.
Yeah.
Because it's considered a loss.
Yeah.
Right? What they want are people like me who pay their premiums every single month, and when they do get sick or have a problem, they call their family members who are doctors and don't pay anything, and get, you know, buy their drugs, you know, whatever, or get free samples or whatever. And so therefore, I've never actually really filed an insurance claim. So, yeah. You know, that's what they want, are people that pay their insurance premiums every single month and never, you know, never cost them a cent.
Yeah, my private health insurance lapsed recently, and I haven't renewed it, and I'm still debating with myself whether I should renew it at all. The only advantage to me is that if I was diagnosed with something like cancer, I'd be able to be treated faster. That's the only potential benefit.
As of 2009, healthcare is 16% of GDP in America.
That's crazy. That's huge.
But it would be fine if we were spending 16% of our GDP on healthcare if we had healthcare.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But Arthur, what I was going to say is I find it interesting that you what you just said, because we changed the way our extra insurance at work has been set up. So you can pick and choose where you want to put your benefits. You get like 100 credits, how many credits do you want to put to this, how many credits do you want to put to that, how many credits do you want to put to this. And I maxed out everything I could possibly, because I got injured on the job. And I'm like, I am never going through this crap again where I'm supposed to live on 50% of my income.
Yeah.
And it didn't change the amount of money that came off my paycheck. I could choose not to opt into the program and keep that money, but I thought, you know what, it comes off before I even see it, before I'm even taxed, so why not max it out?
Yeah.
And it has come in so handy, because even though I got hurt on the job and I've got workers' comp, there is still income that I'm missing.
Yeah.
So my insurance covers that.
Well, that is one thing that's very different in New Zealand from the U.S. and Canada, and that's that benefits as such are really pretty rare for employees here. There's no reason to provide health insurance, because every worker is automatically covered anyway. There's no the only thing that is sometimes provided, and even that's kind of rare, is some sort of retirement plan. When at my last The last company I worked for, they had a company-wide retirement plan that I was in, and they also offered subsidized private health insurance as well. And again, it doesn't replace the national scheme; it just adds on to it. And
right.
But that's unusual. It's very unusual.
Right. Which, I mean, that is the point that Obama was trying to make in some of his healthcare proposal speeches, that I don't think he hit hard enough home on.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that those are, what's the name of it? They are costs. What are they? They're costs not directly associated with business, but they are
opportunity costs?
Externalities. That's what it is. It's the externalities of the cost of doing business. And which is why we are losing so many businesses here in the United States. They're moving to other countries. Why would, you know, if I need a well-educated workforce to run my business, I could either go here in the United States where I have to pay their health insurance and offer them like these huge benefit packages because they don't have them. Or I could go overseas to, let's say, to England, and, you know, they have national health care there. I don't have to burden the so I can actually pay less for my employees when you take into account the externalities of it.
Mm.
Manufacturing jobs, you know, when we get into the externalities there, then we get into the environmental and regulatory stuff, which that's what's really killing us right now, right? Is there is a cost of business for me producing toxic sludge that I have to follow some regulation to dispose of, whereas if I go to China, I don't have that cost.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's cheaper for me to go there and do, which is completely wrong. And for 120 years of this country's history, we effortlessly handled all of this stuff with tariffs and made it absolutely neutral for things to for those externalities, right? So if you wanted to go set up your company in China and dump your toxic sludge everywhere, then great, yay for you, you're going to do that. But when you import your product here into the United States, we're going to charge you the difference from what it would cost to manufacture it here in the United States as a tariff.
Mm.
So therefore, you didn't, it is a zero-sum game at that point. You did not benefit anything by those lower costs in that other country, because it's still, you're going to have to pay the same amount of your cost by the time you get it here to our country. And the United States is one of the only countries right now that no longer has tariffs, heavy tariffs on those things. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
Canada still has tariffs. Australia still has tariffs. UK still has tariffs.
That's one of my main arguments against free trade agreements. They end up benefiting the big corporates, but they don't end up benefiting anybody else, certainly not workers. And although the US and Australia do have a free trade agreement now, when I do remember when it was being debated in Congress, one of the Congress drones was saying it was the most pro-USA trade policy trade agreement that had ever been presented to Congress, because the US never gives up anything. When it signs a free trade agreement, it's the other country that always gives up everything. And Australia, despite some of the propaganda among the politicians, does regret a lot of the details in its free trade agreement. And it's one of the reasons why many of us don't want a free trade agreement between New Zealand and the United States. The United States.
We gave up.
Well, that's how Canada got screwed.
Yeah.
I would say the original free trade agreement and then further one done by Clinton, we did give up. We gave up the entire store.
Would you talk about NAFTA?
Well, the original, Reagan pretty much just got rid of all tariffs.
Yeah.
Actually, in fairness, the last half of the Carter administration. But Reagan certainly continued that and jumped in with it. And then Clinton with NAFTA. We gave up everything.
Yeah, although Canada and Mexico may not agree with that.
Yeah, see, I'm not going to agree with you on that, because at the time when that went through, great, the American dollar is way higher, so things balanced out at the end of the day, but not now. And the U.S. is our number one customer.
Yeah.
U.S. wants to buy. U.S. wants to buy. They take all our water. That U.S. is our number one customer for water, electricity, and lumber.
What about oil?
But we have to pay. We have to pay to make you our customer.
Yeah, but that's your fault. We have the exact opposite with Mexico, right? I can go set up a manufacturing plant down in Mexico, and pay absolutely no penalty for producing it in Mexico and bringing it back into the U.S.
Okay, well then go get your fresh water from the Mexicos.
Yeah, they don't have all that much, I don't think, do they?
If I'm a rocket, and oil.
Sorry, I forgot to add oil in there.
I asked that. Yeah, we're the largest. Oil. I know you guys are our largest supplier of oil, but at the same time,
Saudi Arabia.
I'm speaking well, but we still buy more oil from you than we do from them. Yeah. The thing is that I'm talking about this from the multinational corporation standpoint. It's like we get away everything. We basically ceded everything to corporate control, starting, you know, tail end of Carter Reagan. And we've never, ever, we have the most insane trade policy in the history of the world.
Yep.
Because we have almost no manufacturing here anymore. Why should we?
Well, that's why the U.S. has had a trade deficit for how many years?
Yes, since Reagan. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. And it sickens me to think about that amount. Like, it's in the, what, billions, hundreds of billions, tens of billions? Yeah. It's ridiculous, and that's frightening.
And then on top of that, we turn around and do this mass jack-off thing with the illegal aliens. Excuse me, with the undocumented workers. You know, we do this stupid fucking thing, and I know I've said this on 100 group shows before, but I will say it one more time.
Keep going.
If we want to end our problem with undocumented workers, it can be solved tomorrow. Very simply. We don't have to build a fence. We don't have to build a border. We don't have to spend millions of dollars to police anything on the border. Simply, all we have to do is toughen the laws for employers and actually enforce them. So that employers will have to pay a substantial penalty for hiring them. Because right now, we don't punish the employers at all. So the employer hires all these undocumented workers, goes out there, they get raided, half of them get sent back, fine, they replace them 2 days later.
Which is why the Republicans aren't serious about illegal immigration, because if they were, they would be proposing those exact same things. But that would hurt their base.
Well, right, it is have manicured lawns,
right? But it is also, well, you know what? See, that is a talking point that, you know, we make it into this ridiculous, you know, they're taking the jobs that we don't want, blah 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 blah. But at the same point, it annoys me when people talk about the illegal immigration situation, and yet they're incapable of thinking about it from their own standpoint, which is, you know what? I really like Canada. I like the free healthcare up there. But you know what? If I just got in my car and drove to Canada,
it's not free.
Yeah. Well.
But no, what I'm saying is I like nationalized healthcare. Whatever. I want to go live in Canada. But if I got in my car tomorrow and drove up to Canada, I couldn't get a job. I couldn't get an apartment. I couldn't do any of those things because I'm not there. You know, unless I had some kind of a worker visa. I can't just be an American citizen and go there and rent an apartment and get a job there without the proper paperwork.
Yeah.
Because there are substantial penalties that those companies would have to pay if they did hire me.
Yeah, okay. Yes, definitely.
See what I'm trying to say? We completely don't have those laws at all. Or we what few laws we do have like that, we absolutely don't enforce them. So we don't have an illegal immigrant problem in this country. We have an illegal employment problem in this country, and all we are doing is just spreading around a bunch of fear and hype instead of actually solving the problem, which would be incredibly simple to solve. And I'm not, you know, I take this from Tom Hartman and other luminaries. This is not, you know, my own like sat down and thought about this thing. It just makes perfect sense.
Would that require some sort of rigid national ID card system?
No, absolutely.
Because that's what the right says.
But that's bullshit. That's absolutely bullshit. All it comes down to is if the employers actually have to spend the time to verify that the person that they are working, that they are hiring, is actually legally able to work in this country.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Doesn't mean you have to have a national ID card. Doesn't mean you have to have blah 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 blah. All it means is like, hey, do you have a valid social security number? And do you have a, you know, some kind of legal ID?
Yeah.
But here's something that I find curious about that whole bit is my mother had a really wicked job where she could actually telecommute. So she can go visit my sister in, 300 kilometers away and get up in the morning, log on to the computer, telecommute into work and work and get her stuff done and be done and work is happy and all that. But she can't do that from Arizona because she's on U.S. soil and working.
Right.
So what the heck difference does it make where she is?
Yeah, well.
When her work is internet-based. So if I was
I would argue that she could do it from Arizona.
I relate that to me. So while we were there at Gay Days, I could not at all write on my blog because I might receive a gift or financial compensation for a post that I put on.
But that has to do with Canada's laws. That doesn't have to do with...
No, that has to do with the U.S. laws. You can't take away... A foreign citizen cannot take away a job that could be done by a U.S. citizen while you're on U.S. soil.
But if they're doing a job for a Canadian company, that's irrelevant.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
Because the way it works here is that if you're in New Zealand...
My airline... I'm gonna interrupt you there.
Yeah.
My airline cannot put our employees at U.S. stations. We have to hire U.S. citizens.
Right.
We can send a trainer down to train them to our standards, but we cannot put our own employees at those airports.
Yeah, so but that has to do with...
Any foreign airline at that airport, when you're looking at those people, they're not foreign. They're American citizens.
Yeah, but they're
working for a foreign company.
I completely understand what you're saying, but what I'm trying to, if you'll allow me here, that's a physical job. That is a physical have to go to a location kind of a job. Whereas your mother telecommuting, or for you writing on your blog, one could argue where even that exists.
I totally agree with you on that. I'm taking it a little further there, but
yeah. But yeah. I'm just saying that is a physical job, and then you could also argue on top of that. Well, we don't want the people in our airports, which are regulated by a federal agency. We don't want people there that are foreign nationals because of security reasons. Da da da. And every country may do that. That's that seems to be an okay argument that people could make. But. I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I would argue your mom probably could work from Arizona just fine because she's doing is going into, the internet. She's using the internet at that point.
Yeah, usually, I would have agreed with her on that, but she works for the government, so she couldn't.
Well, that may be more about their policies, because generally speaking, what matters is where the job is physically located, the tax home, the tax domicile of the job. And normally that's the country where you're telecommuting to. And where you're physically located it can be problematic because none of the tax codes in as far as I know, any developed country have taken into account international telecommuting.
Well, and that's what blows me away because how many people fly away on business and sit in their hotel rooms and work on their computers and take care of business while they're away from their own country?
Well, yeah. Well, normally, for most taxpayers, what matters is, as I said, where the job is technically located, but also where their own tax home is and their own
Yeah, well, really, all we residence. Care about is when they get paid, who gets the taxes.
Yeah.
That's the end result of it, is if I'm sitting here in America telecommuting for some Canadian company and doing programming work for them and they're paying me but not paying any taxes, then that's a problem for the government.
Yeah, well, you're going to pay it on your income, though, because you're going to have to report that income.
If I choose to report that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we've just gone way off the rails.
Yeah, we did. Sorry.
Yeah, but it is something that most people don't talk about. That's for sure anyway.
But I would argue that I couldn't do that anyway. I would argue that a Canadian absolutely could work for a American company because the penalties for them, not paying taxes for them or not reporting them properly are minimal far less than what they would actually have to set up to do that. Whereas a Canadian company would not hire me under the table like that, because if they were to get caught, it would be it would cost them far more money in fines and in legal fees than it would to actually have hired a Canadian to do it in the first place, which comes full circle back to the whole tariff idea.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. And I know immigration rules have, in the last 6 years, 7 years, have really clamped down. Like, I've got some friends that live in Missouri that are trying to immigrate here, and they're having a bitch of a time, if that makes any sense. But both of them have professions that are on the list of needed professions up here.
I had an entire conversation with Nigel and Arthur the other night.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I was wrong. You actually can be up to 55.
Good. So I have some time.
Yeah, you've got some time.
Yeah, because I want the fuck out of this country.
Arthur, you were wrong.
I was. I thought it was 45 because that's what it is for Australia. But no, it's 55. And I found that out, by the way, when news broke that Riff Raff, Richard O'Brien, the actor, has been granted permanent residency in New Zealand. And he'd been seeking it for quite a while. He'd lived for a good chunk of his life here in New Zealand. And he wrote Rocky Horror Picture Show while he was here. Rocky Horror Show at that time. And but the immigration authorities were denying him residency because he was like 65 or something. Is, I should say.
Right. But Riff Raff is coming home. Now we've bored the rest of the people. Okay. What else you got on your list?
Well, that's actually about it, because we're coming up on an hour.
Okay, good. I want the fuck out of this country.
Well, I suspect there might be one or two people who might pack your bags for you.
Daniel, come on up. I'll show you the best place to go for empanadas.
I'm not talking about visiting another country. I'm talking about I don't want to be an American. I'm embarrassed at the stupidity and the ignorance of my fellow, and I say that with scare quotes, my fellow countrymen. I don't agree with any of their major policy positions. And it's just kind of like, you know what I'm saying? You don't get to choose where you're born.
No.
You're born in this place. You're indoctrinated in this, you know, nationalism, yada, yada, yada. But then really, when you sit down and take an objective look at it, it's like, does this country stand for the things that I stand for? And I have to say, more often than not, no.
No.
This country does not stand for anything that I stand for. So therefore, you know, in order to save myself some cognitive dissonance here, it's like, why am I here? Why am I continuing to be here if this is not where I... this country does not represent any of the ideals that I represent or that I hold dear. So why am I here? Because I was born here? Because some accident of birth, I happened to be born geographically in this location?
Well, we hope it wasn't an accident. But no, I totally agree.
I was an accident.
I'm just saying, it annoys me, you know, and I do the, you know, I bought into the whole, well, then fight for, you know, to make the country in your own image and, you know, work on that and stuff. But the deck is stacked at this point with the Supreme Court and this corporate ruling. You know, this is fucked. And I hate to say this, but I mean, America is fucked.
Well,
I'm sorry, and if you people don't realize that America is fucked,
I said that at a party the other night. We were talking about policy and debate and whatnot. And it was pretty much a 50-50 split between the straight and the gays that were there. But we were talking about American policy and rights, and it was interesting because the host of the party, her husband actually had to be rushed to the hospital, and she was like, no, we're still going for the party, it's not a big deal, yada yada yada. And you know, stubborn old Portuguese people, they're not old, but anyway, we were sitting there and talking about it and how then it kind of drifted towards the American thing, and I'm like, America is fucked because it's 51 separate countries trying to stand up and say, I'm a big boy, against each other and puff out their chests, and no one's going to back down.
Yeah, aside from the social issues, aside from the gay rights, aside from all of those things, which are important, in reality, it comes down to a class thing. You know, and I speak as someone who was born and raised in the upper middle class, but I'm quite happy and quite content to be a member of the middle class. I have no aspirations of being in the ruling plutocracy of whatever. It's just not interesting to me. I'm perfectly happy to be in the solid middle class, to live my life comfortably and have plenty of leisure time. Yet when you look at what we view the middle class, you know, the shrinking middle class here in the United States, and the penalties that we are putting upon them, and just the rewards that we only give to the top 1%, you know, this becomes a nation of greed. This becomes a nation of, if you're not constantly trying to fuck over your neighbor in order to get ahead, to get up into the upper levels, then you're screwed. You're just going to sit, you're going to be screwed. Whereas if you turn around and look at some of the European countries where, you know, they support the middle class and there are things in place that make the middle class viable, primarily by taxing the upper class. You know, by making things more egalitarian, which, you know, in here, in our rhetoric speak here in America, that's socialism. That's, oh my God, that's socialism and evil. But in my mind, it's like, no, that's actually quite good. I kind of like that. And I'm kind of okay with that.
It also prevents rule by the corporate elites. So corporations aren't dictating public policy. I mean, right. Governments will pursue their national interests. Like, for instance, for New Zealand, it's got to do primarily with agricultural exports. But that doesn't mean that they're going to exalt the interests of our largest dairy exporter, which is called Fonterra, above everyone else. They don't, you know, push everyone else out of the way so that Fonterra can do whatever it wants. And that's exactly right. What you see in the U.S., where the government actually goes into overdrive to make things easy for corporations and hard for everyone else. I mean, the Wall Street reform that wasn't Wall Street reform, for instance. That's a prime example.
Just BP, a foreign company. BP, let's just bend over. But yeah, hey, you want to spray all kind of like toxic shit into the middle of the ocean? Yeah, go ahead. Because if that big oil spill shows up on the surface, it looks really bad in pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, but let me just say this. Like, you take Germany as my current example that I happen to love. Now, Germany had the same economic problem that we did, almost at the same time. I mean, it was a global collapse. Yet Germany is pretty much already out of it.
Yeah.
It's like, we're still floundering around in it. And so you take a look, well, what the fuck are they doing over there that we're not doing over here? And it's because they don't have this bullshit socialist phobia attitude, right? I mean, the government Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, what's the problem with a little bit of socialistic attitude towards your thinking.
Well,
that's like saying, oh God, no, let's not put any vanilla in the angel food cake.
Right. And it's aside from that, is that Germany spent per GDP as much money as we did on their bailout. Right. So we both spent about the same amount of money to two countries. Spent the same amount of money to bail themselves out. Yet we kind of maybe might have stopped the bleeding, possibly, but certainly did not recover from it, whereas Germany has pretty much recovered from it. So if we both spent the same amount of money, then you have to look at the differences between what they spent their money on, whereas Germany gave money directly to the workers and used that fund to actually say, hey, you know what, because there's a lull in manufacturing because of less of demand, then all the workers here get to go to a four-day work week, and we're still going to pay you for the fifth day. So the government's going to pay you for that extra fifth day. But until things pick up, that keeps your salary constant so that you can still buy goods.
Which is necessary.
Which is necessary. And, you know, so that's how we're going to spend our money. Whereas if you look at what we spend our money on, we basically gave billions of dollars to large corporations who promptly turned around and gave it to other areas of their countries out of our country.
Yeah.
I mean, other areas of their company outside of our country. So we just basically gave multinational corporations billions of dollars with the hopes that, oh yeah, maybe they'll do something good with it.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we'll do this cash for clunkers thing, which actually was quite successful, but we're going to bitch about it because it was too successful. And, and yeah. You know, because what you have here is you have this political controversy or this political atmosphere here where, you know, we are so highly partisan that if we were to recover from this recession, it's just bad for the Republicans.
Yeah.
So they're going to do every possible thing they can to keep us from recovering, because if we are able to recover from it as quickly as Germany would, then all it would be a big, huge feather in the cap to the Democrats. So therefore, we got to make everyone suffer so that we can get our little whiny fucking asses back in power. Because yeah. That's all it is in this country. And I'm sorry. I'm
well,
sorry.
It's true. Well, but also from my perspective, what you've got in the U.S. now is the right and the far right. The center, politically speaking, in terms of the parties, the center has pretty much collapsed, and there is no viable left to speak of left anymore. I mean, the outspoken liberals in Congress are notable for their rarity. You know, I'm thinking like of Anthony Weiner, for instance, or Alan Grayson or somebody like that. They're so rare now. And yet the screaming memes on the right are a dime a dozen. There's hundreds of them in Congress.
Right.
Where's the left?
I mean, see, that's why I like the multi-party system that we have.
Well, yeah, that definitely helps. And also moderates both ends of the spectrum.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. It moderates, and it's like the New Democrat Party, which is a very socialistic party, could not.
Good night, Scotty. Who's joining us from the UK?
From the OC. They're way, way on the left, very socialistic. They would bankrupt the country, if they were ever in power federally. But they put enough pressure on all the other parties to bring us up to the middle, or maybe just a little bit left of middle. And that's what keeps the whole system in check.
Well,
when we switch from the left to the right of center with government, it's kept in check.
Well, yeah, and when New Zealand moves from left to right, it's just by degrees, by and large. I mean, there are usually some, you know, signature policies that are completely different from each other. But generally speaking, it just weaves back and forth over the middle, because that's where most people feel that they are. If you look at any survey, and I think any Western democracy, most people will feel that they're pretty centrist overall. Whether they're slightly left or slightly right is beside the point. Generally speaking, they'll fall somewhere around the center of the spectrum. But the thing is, what most people want is they want to be comfortable. They don't necessarily want to be rich, although some people do. They want to be able to look after their families.
Sign me up.
They want to have good health. They want to know that they're going to be secure in their old age. They want a country that's at peace and safe from outside adversaries. They want an environment that's clean and healthy. They want basic, simple things. And the major parties in the U.S. don't seem willing to deliver it. I do think they're capable of it. I just don't think they're willing to, which is one of the reasons why it annoys me so much when the right keeps going on about the socialist president. Socialist? He's not even liberal. Give me a break.
Oh, I totally agree with you on it. When I look at it from the outside, that makes me laugh, because I would not call Obama even liberal.
No. Although he's also extremely cautious, which is one of the reasons why I think that so many people on the left are so angry at him, because yeah. He's playing things too safely. And instead of being the fierce advocate that he promised to be, and instead of bringing the change and all that sort of thing that he promised, he's just playing it safe. And
well, do you think it's possible that he's playing it safe just so he can then pull off his weave and do it in the second term?
Well, that's if he gets a second term. If he doesn't start doing some things he promised to do, he may never get to that, never get that chance. And he said when he was inaugurated that he would rather be an awesome one-term president than a mediocre two-term president. Well, at the rate he's going, he may not get that choice.
I agree with you.
He's accomplished more than any other president has in their first term, which we don't talk about because we're too busy screaming about other stuff.
True, and I actually think that part of it is his fault.
That disappoints me. That disappoints me, Arthur.
What? That I'm not impressed with him anymore?
Well, no, that just that people go, true. as if that's somehow not a, you know, in the 200 and something plus years history of our country, this gentleman has accomplished more in his first term than any other president that we've ever had, bar none. So that deserves, in my mind, more than a, yeah, true. But...
Well, I guess for me, what it is that he promised so much and delivered so little.
Say what?
What it is for me is that he promised so much and delivered so little. Healthcare reform is a good example. He started out with a conservative proposal, and it got more conservative. Instead of starting out with national healthcare for everyone and then falling back to a public option, he started out with a public option, which is a poor imitation of national health coverage, and then gave that away in order to get a little rearranging of the deck chairs.
See, now I'm sorry, but we can take this argument offline because I completely disagree with you on that. He doesn't write legislation.
Well, that's so
when you
true.
Say he started with a total right thing, the Senate that he had started with that. The Congress actually wrote quite a good bill.
That's true.
It's like the Senate that he had started off with that shit, and then the conservatives and whatnot else in the Senate like watered it down every more. Obama was actually quite hands off policy wise, just saying this has got to be done.
Well, that gets at the cautiousness that I was talking about. I think he should have been in the forefront of it. He wasn't willing to expend political capital on it.
Well, okay, but you spending political capital requires that you have the capital to spend. I don't see what he could have done. All he would have done was make himself look worse because there was nothing he could do. There was nothing he could have offered. There was nothing he could have threatened. There was nothing that he could have done.
That's probably true.
So my point is, my ending question to all of you folks, are we holding him to a higher standard because, you know, he gave us hope? And honestly, you know, he gave us hope, and that was why a lot of people elected him, but doesn't it now incumbent upon us to follow up on that? Isn't it incumbent upon us to actually pay attention and to try to get these things done? Because quite frankly, he's just the president of the United States, which is just a figurehead. And it's like he is the chief law enforcement officer and the executive, the commander in chief of our military. He does not make laws. He does not have the power to make laws. He does not. All he can do is try to persuade other people in his party who do have the powers to make laws to do things, and those people have their own fucked up agenda at this point in time that is largely driven by corporations.
Yeah. Well, then here we go. This is where then he needs to stand up and use his influence and get that party in line.
Well, yeah, but that's Democrats for you. I mean, you could have 100 Democrats in a room and have 100 different kinds of Democratic parties. Democrats have never agreed with each other on anything.
And then the problem is turnip head.
Go ahead.
By what means would he do this? If I'm going to get people in line, if I'm going to pull people in line, I've got to have something that they want,
or I've got to have something on them. That goes right back to my point earlier where I think the multi-party system is a much better system.
I will completely agree with you. I have taken your show completely off.
If you aren't going to fall in line, then you're out of the caucus. Bye.
Yeah,
and
they can't do that in the American system.
Yeah, see,
because
that's
it's not just the multi-party in that case. It's also because in the American system, the members of Congress are elected from constituencies and are beholden to the constituencies, not to the parties. Whereas in a parliamentary system, they're elected as their party representative, and they are beholden to that party. They have to follow whatever the party dictates. It's two completely different systems.
Yeah, plus also Turniped, which I agree with you. I was advocating kicking Joe Lieberman out of the Democratic caucus, but it did not happen because that would have shifted the balance. This is back during the last part of Bush's administration. It would have shifted the balance in the Senate and would have then made the, because we were 50-50, it would have made the Republicans in charge. But to me, it was like, you know what? Then make them in charge. Let them get this shit on them. Because right now, you've got the title of being in charge, but you have no power. You're not doing anything but making yourself look stupid.
I hear you on that.
So let them be the ones so that we can like actually really get power. But anyway, I'm sorry, I've taken your show off the roads and off the ropes.
Yeah, but conversations are always good when they're organic and develop and change and grow.
Let's talk about puppy dogs and sandwiches.
Takeaway message here. It's probably 48 DVD will be done this weekend, and I don't want to live here anymore. Good night, everyone.
Well, as we, Mr. Brewer, there's room up here if you want to come up and hide out in Canada, and we've got lots of subway maps for you to look at.
I'm thinking Germany. Anyway, go ahead.
Why don't we do the thing that that Honey always does? And by the way, I didn't get a chance to say earlier that I know that Honey was listening from some rural winery somewhere. He tweeted that earlier. So if you're still listening, hi.
Because he tweeted it with the Pride, hashtag Pride48. Hashtag Pride48 in his tweet, and it showed up right here in our Pride48 chat room.
Yes.
That was the point that I was trying to make.
Yes.
And I made it back.
Yes. So what would you like to promote, Daniel?
For those of you who missed the beta trivia experiment that happened last week on the Third Colony, which is this new thing that we're doing on Q Nation on Saturday night, where during our Third Colony music show, we are running an interactive trivia game during the show, which is was quite fun for those who participated last week. Anyway, we will be doing another round of beta testing this Saturday night with Nigel on the Third Colony, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on QNation.fm or thethirdcolony.com.
And I'd like to add that this week Nigel is doing music from Canada.
Oddly enough. Cool. So I really have to tune in or I'm in trouble.
Exactly. He'll take away your little maple leaf.
Hey, it's a big maple leaf.
Ooh, sorry. Turniphead, anything that you'd like to promote?
I actually have want to promote Bears in the City. It's a podcast that I've been listening to and catching up on. They live in Sydney. And you can find them at bearsinthecity.com.au, and they're a lot of fun.
Okay, very good. I'm just writing that down so that I can remember to put it in the show notes.
They actually have one Kiwi on there too, actually.
Oh, really?
They're hilarious.
I haven't listened, but I'm aware of them. I heard recently about a expat gay American who has done podcasts here in New Zealand. But I don't think it's available on iTunes, and I still want to find out more about it before I talk more. But recently I've come across a whole bunch of new expats, and so you never know. They might be showing up on this very show, not the live version, of course. All right. Well, Honey from My Honey Wears Plaid will be back next week, I believe. Yes, next week is supposed to be the book club chat. See how that goes. I'm only in chapter 2, so...
Okay, well, chop chop.
Yeah, well, that ain't going to happen, I don't think. But we'll see. You never know. And do be sure to listen to The Third Colony, as Daniel said, when my husband is hosting this week.
Somebody's asking in the chat room if we're playing the trivia through the chat room. No, we actually have a trivia client that will run on your system.
Do you have to go to the website to play?
Yes. Yes. Because it is a web application.
Yes. I'm just asking that.
Oh, so you're
that
playing you can devil's say advocate.
That. Yes, exactly.
End your damn show, Arthur.
Well, that's it, everybody. Thanks for listening. Tune in on Saturday and also for Honey next week. Thanks. Bye.
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 You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's ArthuR, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.